You're listening to Underground History, a collaboration between Jefferson Public Radio and the Southern Oregon University Laboratory of Anthropology, or SULA. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and each episode we take a deep dive into little-known aspects of history in Oregon and beyond. Summer is tomato and peach and archaeology season. And on today's episode, we're going to catch up with Chris Ruiz, Deputy Director of the Archaeological Research Division at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History. And he's just one of the many archaeologists across the state returning from the field with dusty boots and a stockpile of new data. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I wanted to frame our discussion today as sort of a field school roundup. SOU and U of O both ran field schools this year, so did other folks, but I thought it'd be interesting for our listeners to hear a little bit about this important rite of passage for archaeological students. And funnily enough, I was reminded this morning that my field school was exactly 20 years ago, and I know that because it was during Hurricane Katrina, and I remember watching the footage, actually the both of us did together, each evening when I came back from the field. But why don't we start out with, where did you do your field school?
Well, I did my field school in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was actually a Folsom Age site on the West Mesa of Albuquerque, like across the city from where I actually grew up.
Oh, awesome. So, totally different from what you did this summer with your students at the U of O.
Yeah, absolutely.
Full 180. So, you know, field schools provide a lot of valuable training for archaeologists, but they're also a really important tool for research because you get to bring a lot of labor to the site without having to pay for it. So how have field schools provided the opportunity for you to check out places that you wouldn't normally be able to? I'm curious because I know that this particular spot you visited a couple times now is made possible by kind of embedding it in this educational experience.
Yeah, so this is the first field school I've personally run. And in this situation, we had been partnered with the Applegate Heritage Arts and Education nonprofit. They had gone after grant funding to help support various projects we've had out there since 2012. And this was the first year that we ran a field school, and archaeological projects can be expensive. And previous ones we did out there were largely
volunteer,
funded by these grants that the AHA had received, but also through volunteers. And this year, the field school gave us the opportunity to do a lot more work for a longer period of time than we have previously.
And, you know, field schools all have the shared goal of providing students with relevant experience and instructions, but they can look a lot of different ways. Like you had mentioned, your field school in New Mexico, my field school was actually through the University of Oregon at Boston Mills. But our field school, you know, the one that I just ran this summer, we camped together for a month and kind of hopped around the state. And yours was a commuter school, which meant that everybody got to go home at night. So when you're building your field schools and designing a course, like what factors are you weighing to kind of present it, the option to the students?
Yeah, I think when we were designing our field school, we were really interested in being able to offer it to students that might not have the ability to go out for long stretches. Their schedules wouldn't allow that. So they might have, you know, jobs on the weekend or during the evenings, and they might have pets or, you know, family. And so field school, the ones that require travel, are not always accessible to everybody. So it was really important to us to offer a field school that a variety of students might be able to participate in.
Yeah, that's great. So it is kind of hard for folks to pack up for, you know, our field school was a month, but others are 6 weeks or longer. And that's a big chunk of time in the summer to devote to, you know, this kind of thing. So that's cool that you guys have options for folks, especially folks in the Eugene area. It wouldn't be so helpful if somebody was not in that area. They had to be near their commuting distance, I guess, huh?
Well, yeah, and actually, we were fortunate to be joined by some students that were more local to northern Douglas County and southern Lane County. So a student was from Cottage Grove, and another one was in Roseburg. So, you know, that proximity to Yonkala was really fortunate for those two students.
And you mentioned this was the first field school that you'd ever been the instructor on, but the U of O has a long track record of doing lots of field schools and some that are producing really, really important information like Paisley Caves and Connolly Caves and those in Eastern Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. The museum has had field schools for decades.
Yeah. So you're in a legacy, or I guess a tradition of field schools through the University of Oregon. And did you guys, was that the only one you ran this summer? Because I know sometimes you have multiple from the U of O.
Yeah, there was actually another field school, but it was in California.
Oh.
And it was directed by Dr. Gabe Sanchez.
Oh, okay. So our field school had a focus on public archaeology, which meant we had a lot of public-facing events, talks, and activities that were embedded through the project. And this created a lot more work for me, but it also was a really important strategy for building engagement and community support. And I know that your field school, like you said, is tied into this larger project that is really engaged with the public and the community. So I'm wondering, like, what that looked like for you this year. Like, what was that collaboration like with the folks who have been working at the Applegate House and, you know, the community that really is interested in that site?
Yeah, so the Applegate House is the oldest continuous, or reportedly the oldest continuously owned property in Oregon, and the family ownership. And the family continues to own it, but they also have a board that helps manage the property and raise funds for the replacement of the roof. They raised a lot of money because that was an expensive undertaking. So, you know, throughout the project, we had family members were out there a lot, and friends. And then, of course, the board members helped prepare this wonderful meal, like a lunch for the students. And that was a really nice time. And, you know, the family invited us into the old house and let us stage lectures in the living room, and would join us to hear guest lectures that would join us for the field school.
That's so awesome. You're listening to Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose. And today we are talking field schools with Chris Ruiz. So that, you know, embedding your work and your project and class in with this larger kind of collaborative effort, I think that's such an important thing about, you know, some of the opportunities that we have today as archaeologists. It wasn't always the case. Sometimes archaeology was very, you know, secret, and there's worries about looting, or really folks would be territorial about, you know, discoveries and wanting to make sure they claimed it as their own findings. But, you know, I think that it's exciting to be working in a time where we can really do this community engaged work. And what do you think that, you know, adds for the students that are having this experience with you?
Yeah, I think the community element really highlights why archaeology is important. And so the students, I think, through that process, see how their work can expand the stories,
yeah.
Oregon's stories, and why those stories are important and how they impact the communities that we, you know, typically work in.
And at the end of the class, most students have a pretty good idea of whether archaeology is for them or not. So our show producer here today took my class, Charlie, last year. And one of the things that they walked away with was being cured of their interest in becoming an archaeologist, which is good to know. So what do you think is the most challenging thing that you teach students, or one of the things that you really want to make sure that they take away from the experience?
Yeah, I think for me, I want to allow them the chance to learn field techniques and archaeological techniques, you know, whether it's using a shovel or a trowel, but always working within those, you know, the really meticulous way we excavate, and learning how to do that and getting comfortable with it. And, you know, even to laying out units is totally new experience. Excavation units.
Mm-hmm.
Is a new experience for most students. So the way archaeological field investigations are conducted is really rigorous. And so I'd like the students to walk away with those skills.
Yeah. And I think one of the benefits to your particular class is you spent the entire time in one site. So the students really got to know the site and the soils and kind of understand things better. We hopped around a lot, which has some advantages because students got access to survey, to, you know, excavation, to, you know, different types of things that we do as archaeologists. But I think there's, you know, value in both types of experiences. So what do you think that students, like, when they first show up to that site and then when they leave there, like, how do you think that they're changing the way they think about it?
You know, I think they, you know, are familiar with archaeology from a textbook example, but the fieldwork element's probably a mystery. So, you know, all those things that go into documenting, doing archaeological documentation as you're excavating, like describing soils and, you know, changes in artifacts as you're excavating down and how deep you go. All those are new things. And I think students at first, they might not find a very, you know, they might not be finding much and it might be disappointing, but as they hear about the site at large, they and what other students are finding, they start realizing that it's not just about, you know, the big discoveries, it's about understanding the site. So even, you know, excavation units that aren't productive are telling us something about, you know, the distribution or the concentrations or the use areas at a site. And it's actually interesting. You mentioned we kind of focused on two areas at Applegate, and one was a much larger, almost an acre, where we had units spread very spread out, and we were looking for the remains of a blacksmith shop. And some of those units were, you know, not interesting on their own, but when you start to piece them all together, we start to kind of hone in on an area that we thought was promising.
Oh, that's cool. Did you use ground penetrating radar at all?
We have in the past, but not at that particular portion of the site. So that was something that I think we'd like to try in the future.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. And what you mentioned that you had lectures and stuff. So what kind of talks did you have, or what kind of programming, or was it just you guys being like, here's everything you need to know about nails, or like, what was going on there?
Yeah. Well, we had, you know, workshops that were focused on historical artifact identification. We had guest lectures on identifying faunal remains or animal bone and macrobotanical remains. And also, we also had a guest lecture that discussed curation of artifacts. What happens to all this material after, you know, it's been taken back to a lab, analyzed, reported, and then, you know, what happens to everything after that?
Yeah,
process.
I remember when I first started out, I was like so excited when we'd find whole bottles or something. And now that I've been doing this a while, when I see a whole bottle, it's like, ugh, it's going to take up so much space. So we get jaded. When you can find the same amount of information from, you know, key parts of it if it's broken. So it's kind of good to remind folks that curation, you know, and the constraints and the realities and the responsibility of like holding on to this stuff forever and ever and ever has its own challenges.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just want to kind of, you know, end on a note, like, how do you measure the success in field school? We're both freshly back from the field and we can't really like reveal big findings because we don't have them all figured out yet. But there's often a good sense of accomplishment, you know, of what, you know, how the project went. So what's your kind of takeaway after being at this field school, and what's next for you on this project?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, one of the things was the students had a final paper where they kind of reflected on their field school experience. And I was really excited to see so many, you know, sharp observations about, you know, the archaeology and what we were finding and how we might approach it in the future. And I felt like that was success because they were starting to think like archaeologists.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. And and will these be students that you'll be able to work with again in the coming school year? Do you kind of recruit from the crop of the field school?
Yeah, well, some of them are going to probably go, they had already graduated, mm-hmm. so they're looking towards careers in cultural resource management as, you know, archaeologists, and then some of them are still working on their degrees. So this fall, we plan to offer what's called a PLE, or Practical Learning Experience course, that will invite the students in to participate in the lab work, the cataloging and inventorying of the artifacts we found. And some of the students I hope to work with on, you know, some museum projects in the very near future.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Chris, for joining us, and best of luck with your project. That wraps up this round of Underground History on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm your host, Chelsea Rose, and our show producers are Natalie Golay and Charlie Zimmerman, the one that does not want to be an archaeologist. And you can find this episode and many more at jeffexchange.org or wherever you get your podcasts.